This is NBC Nightly News, Wednesday, January 29th, with John Chancellor reporting from the NBC News Center in New York and David Brinkley's Journal from Washington.
Good evening. NBC News learned today that President Ford has decided to extend his clemency program for Vietnam War deserters and draft evaders for at least 1 month. This news comes on a day when the president reaffirmed his determination to send more aid to Cambodia and South Vietnam, and on a day when underground anti-war dissidents claimed credit for bombs placed in public buildings in protest against Mr. Ford's aid proposals. The clemency program has not been a great success, but John Cochran of our staff has learned that the president has decided that if it is given more time, it might work better. Here is Cochran's report.
President Ford's decision resolves a debate within his administration. The chairman of the president's clemency board, Charles Goodell, had argued that the board's recent publicity campaign is just beginning to pay off and that it needs more time to explain the clemency offer to draft resistors and deserters who've not yet heard about it. Goodell wanted a six-month extension. But some administration officials were opposed to any extension at all until new figures showed an upsurge of 3,000 applications this month. Then sources say Mr. Ford and his advisors settled on the one-month extension. But some White House officials believe that if the number of applications continues to increase sharply next month, Mr. Ford may grant yet another extension. John Cochran, NBC News at the White House.
One feature of the clemency program, which many deserters and evaders had not known about, is a list compiled by the Justice Department of some 4,400 men wanted on charges of draft evasion. There are an estimated 190,000 draft offenders, but if a man's name does not appear on the list, chances are good that he can return to the United States and not face charges. Many offenders are in Canada, and Robert Hager went there to sample reaction to the publication of the Justice Department's list.
From urban Montreal and Toronto in the east, here to the great prairies around Winnipeg and on to the Canadian Rockies, news of the draft evaders wanted list has spread, and spread fast.
There are an estimated 10 to 12,000 draft evaders in Canada. In Winnipeg, a War Resisters Information Center has been answering telephone calls from many of them.
Okay, Cronkite. Let's see. Yeah, Mr. Cronkite, I wouldn't advise you to return to the United States.
Over 300 draft evaders have called here in the last 2 days to find out if their names were missing from the wanted list. Counselor Don Marks tells of one call.
Okay, well, this one fellow whose name is not on the list, well, his wife phoned, and she got very emotional when we told her the good news. His mother is terminally ill, and he can now return to the States and visit her before she passes on.
Another draft evader who found out only this morning that his name was not on the wanted list is Robert Shearer. Shearer works at a grocery store in Winnipeg, but like a lot of war resistors here, Shearer has been away from the United States so long, he's not at all sure he wants to go back.
Well, it means for sure that we'll go back for a visit as soon as we get written verification. Now, whether or not we'll move back to the United States is an uncertainty because we have to look for jobs and everything. I've been in Canada for 5 years. I'm comfortable in Canada. We've bought a house. We're raising two children in Canada in Canadian schools. And it would be another changeover, like the adjustment into Canada. Now we have to readjust back into the United States.
What does being able to visit the States mean to you? Is that a difference?
It means I can see my parents again and see the country that I grew up in and visit old friends and family and everything like that. So, I'll be most anxious to go back for a visit.
But a visit is about all many resistors here are interested in. Robert Hager, NBC News, Winnipeg, Canada.
It was reported yesterday that if a draft evader's name was not on the list, he would face no charges. But today, a Justice Department spokesman said the list is not final and that young men who had never registered for the draft before seeking sanctuary in Canada and elsewhere might still be prosecuted if they returned to the United States. Also in the news today, a series of bomb threats, bombs, and two explosions. Anti-war underground organizations have claimed credit, and we'll cover the story this evening. We'll also have the day's economic news, which today is a mixture of encouraging and discouraging information. And we'll be reporting on a poignant story which involves a wartime love affair in Moscow, a Russian beauty who wants to see her American father, and some Soviet bureaucrats who are saying nyet to that request. Those stories and others in a moment.
Go ahead. Get as close as you want. You don't have to worry about denture odor. You've got extra effervescent Polident. And Polident's got two kinds of cleaning action to help leave your dentures clean and odor-free. Polident's got one, chemical action to help clean away its stains, and two, physical action to help lift away film and odor-causing particles. So whenever you want, get as close as you want. You've got Polident.
Good for us. We're watching our weight and nutrition with the Special K breakfast.
Good for you.
High protein Special K.
A teaspoon of sugar, juice, coffee.
And 4 ounces of skim milk.
Good for you.
A breakfast with protein, vitamins, and iron.
For less than 240 calories.
The Kellogg's Special K breakfast is serious nutrition for weight-conscious adults.
It's delicious.
Good for you.
Good for you.
Good for you. Special K. Good for you.
This is a letter put out by an organization called the Weather Underground, which says it put bombs in the State Department and in a military induction center in Oakland, California, in protest against the possibility of additional American aid to South Vietnam. The bomb went off in the State Department and did a lot of damage. Another was detonated in Oakland, and there were evacuations of employees at the Treasury Department and the Interior Department, along with bomb scares in other places. Here are two reports.
The bomb exploded just before 1 o'clock this morning in a ladies' room on the third floor of the department, not far from an office dealing with aid for Vietnam. The bomb was powerful enough to rip a hole through the ceiling and cause damage to about 20 offices, but there were no injuries. Cleaning crews spent most of the day mopping up water which spilled into hallways and offices from several broken pipes. Lights and telephones were out on two floors, and the water damage was heavy. Officials here said they believe this was the first time a bomb had ever been exploded inside the State Department. The blast also knocked out several third-floor windows, but for the most part, business went on as usual. Security officials said the bombing would lead to a review of security measures, which were tightened only a few years ago. The FBI said the Weather Underground organization, which took credit for the bombing, is the same radical group which was responsible for the bombing of the U.S. Capitol in 1971, and the Pentagon in 1972. But federal officials don't really know much about the group, which is believed to have between 20 and 30 members. Later in the day, there was also a bomb scare here at the Interior Department, about two blocks from the State Department. The building was evacuated, but no bomb was found. Richard Valeriani, NBC News, Washington.
People claiming to be members of the same group that took credit for the Washington bombing tipped news agencies last night that a bomb had also been planted inside the military induction center in Oakland. Shortly after dawn, a dog trained to sniff out explosives was called in, and the bomb, a big one weighing 10 to 15 pounds, was found in a ceiling panel on the seventh floor. Federal authorities had been warned that the bomb was powerful and decided to detonate it in the street rather than take it out of the area. Four blocks were cordoned off, and two small blasts were used to ignite the bomb. Finally, it exploded. The explosion shook nearby buildings and broke windows, but no one was injured. The people who planted the bomb in Oakland said that both the Washington and Oakland bombs were set to protest against American involvement in Indochina. Gail Christian, NBC News, Oakland, California.
In Washington, the president, of course, was aware of the bombs and threats, but he told his cabinet today that he is determined to fight for the additional $522 million he has requested in aid for Cambodia and South Vietnam. Mr. Ford said the odds are in favor of a disaster if the aid is not supplied. The U.S. Army has developed an artillery shell which can be guided to its target, a revolutionary development in ground warfare. It works this way. A ground observer aims a laser beam at a target, say a tank. A 155-millimeter shell is fired from a gun and guides itself to the point where the laser beam reaches the target. The shell seeks the laser beam. This means artillery can hit moving targets, and the Army says the shell is accurate to within 1 to 3 feet. The new shell would cost $5,000 each compared to $150 for a regular shell, but the Army says if it can, one of them can knock out a $500,000 enemy tank, it's worth the price.
Acid in your stomach can sometimes splash into your esophagus to give you
heartburn. Oh, do I have heartburn.
Introducing soothing new Alka-Seltzer Gold, the pure antacid you drink. Down it goes past your esophagus to your stomach to wash heartburn away.
Heartburn, you're all washed up.
New Alka-Seltzer Gold washes heartburn away. For headache with upset stomach, use original Alka-Seltzer with specially buffered aspirin.
The Congress of the United States has passed and the President has signed legislation raising the coverage of the Federal Savings and Loan Insurance Corporation. Effective immediately, your savings are now insured up to $40,000 by this U.S. government agency. When you see this new emblem at your savings and loan, remember it still means no one has ever lost a penny in an insured savings account.
The government's index of economic indicators, a kind of forecast of future trends, fell 2.4% in December. And for the last 5 months of last year, the drop was 11%. That's the worst drop in a comparable period since the Commerce Department began putting these indicators together 27 years ago. But the stock markets continued today to boom. On the New York Exchange, the Dow Jones Industrials went up another 11 points to close over 700 for the first time since last August. And last week, the number of people filing claims for jobless benefits went down 12% to 851,000. Hard times are apt to be hardest on the elderly poor. And nowhere in this country is that more true than in Davenport, Iowa. For one thing, there are more old people in Iowa than in any other American state except Florida. And for another, Davenport provides no low-cost housing for them. Irving R. Levine has more on the story.
Nita McFall lives alone in this two-room apartment. For 2 years, she has always paid her rent on time, $50 a month. But a few days before her 74th birthday, Nita McFall got an eviction notice because on her Social Security of $183 a month, she is unable to pay a $10 rent increase.
What a birthday present.
Finding a decent place to live is especially difficult for old people in Davenport because back in the 1960s, the voters decided to be self-reliant and refused federal money to build low-cost housing for the elderly. Gradually, the city has changed its attitude. It now accepts government food programs and has applied for money to build 200 low-cost apartments, but with no success. So, Davenport sent a delegation, including a dozen old people, to Washington. But they were only able to see a low-level federal housing official, and he told them the proper person to see is back in their home state.
I'm frankly at a loss on why I'm here. The decisions on where they will go, there's the funds, will be made in Mr. Rubin's office.
The people from Davenport didn't get the promise of help that they wanted. Partly the fault lies with Davenport for refusing to accept government money to house its elderly when money was available. And now that Davenport wants government money, there just isn't much to be had. Irving R. Levine, NBC News at the Capitol.
President Ford is willing to have a compromise on his tax proposals with Democrats in the Congress, but he stood just as firm today as he has in the last week on his determination to put additional tariffs on imported crude oil. And that prompted Congressman Al Ullman, chairman of the House Ways and Means Committee, to say, quote, "We must somehow find a way to avoid a confrontation." Ullman spent an hour at the White House today with the president, but what either man said was not disclosed. The FBI has admitted compiling information on congressmen and candidates for Congress and says it has stopped doing it. But NBC News has learned more about how the FBI gathered information on congressmen. Ford Rowan has that story.
In 1972, the FBI sent this instruction to its field offices, ordering agents to collect information on candidates for Congress. It said, these matters must always be handled with extreme discretion. If a field office did not furnish information, another memo went out. Then another memo, and if there was no response, still another memo was sent to FBI agents demanding the information for the Crime Records Division. A 1973 internal FBI memo indicates how the material on congressmen was indexed and kept in separate files in two FBI buildings to prevent outsiders from discovering the files. Last February, when FBI Director Clarence Kelly was asked if the FBI keeps such files, he testified, insofar as a dossier or anything else, there is none, and there is none now being maintained. But Kelly acknowledged last week that information on congressmen is in fact kept in FBI files. However, he said the FBI does not solicit such information. Asked about those memos soliciting information about congressmen, an FBI spokesman claimed that that practice was halted in late 1972. Ford Rowan, NBC News, Washington.
The FBI also waged an intensive campaign against groups and individuals opposed to the Vietnam War. And the New York Times reported today the FBI even went so far as to try to get an anti-war university professor fired by writing a derogatory, anonymous letter to his superiors. Fred Briggs has more on that story.
In May of 1970, following the invasion of Cambodia, there were demonstrations on campuses all over the country. The chief organizer of this one, at Arizona State University, was philosophy professor Morris Starsky, an avowed socialist who apparently had been under FBI surveillance for at least 2 years. After the demonstrations, the FBI sent an anonymous letter to a university faculty committee charging Starsky with a number of offenses, including falsifying class attendance records. The committee didn't fire him, but the Arizona Board of Regents did. Today in Phoenix, Starsky announced he had obtained copies of FBI memos which clearly show the Bureau was out to get him fired and that the anonymous letter was sent with the late J. Edgar Hoover's blessing.
This was done not because I was engaged in any unlawful activity, but only because I was exercising my constitutional right to express dissident views, views that the FBI did not like.
What does all this mean to the everyday person who is not in political life? Is he endangered?
Yes. The everyday person who's not in political life should feel very concerned, very endangered, should feel that his or her rights are under direct assault by agencies of the federal government and should take steps to stop it. That's that they really have cause for alarm.
A federal court has ordered Starsky reinstated at the university, but Arizona is appealing that order. Fred Briggs, NBC News, Phoenix.
Ready, set, go. You've seen commercials where liquid or crystal drain openers tell you how fast they are. Well, I can beat them both with amazing drain power. Why don't I hurry? No need to. 1 second is all it takes. Watch. Drain power, incredibly fast, and it works without lye or acid. Get amazing drain power, the 1 second drain opener.
Like millions of others, I'm sometimes troubled by arthritis. When my friends told me the way Exocaine works, I couldn't believe it.
This is Exocaine, Exocaine medicated foam, the only leading rub containing benzocaine, the fast-acting anesthetic that deadens pain up to hours at a time. Exocaine starts to penetrate immediately to temporarily deaden minor aches and pains of arthritis.
I do feel less pain with Exocaine.
Fast-acting Exocaine to temporarily deaden minor arthritis.
Viva, the towel that's known for its absorbency, is challenging another absorbent paper towel in a different kind of test, scrubbing with an abrasive cleanser.
Okay.
Viva keeps right on working. Viva didn't fall apart. Viva, the absorbent paper towel that keeps on working.
President Sadat of Egypt said today that France will sell him some of its new Mirage F-1 fighter bombers. He made that announcement on the final day of a visit to Paris. Garrick Utley has more on Sadat's trip.
For 2 days, Sadat and his host Giscard d'Estaing enjoyed French food and wine and made some important deals. Most important, Egypt will buy French Mirage jets. It's believed about 50 of them. It's a lucrative sale for the French and a major decision by Sadat to turn away from the Soviet Union and towards France for weapons. Most of Sadat's meetings here were not about politics, but business. This morning, he tried to persuade French business leaders to invest more in Egypt. Sadat agreed to buy a number of French products, including a subway system for Cairo. That doesn't come cheap. So Sadat also met with Arab ambassadors in Paris. Those whose countries have oil and money, which Egypt doesn't, will end up having to pay for many of Sadat's purchases, including the Mirages. At a news conference today, Sadat told the French politely that they don't have an important role to play politically in the Middle East, but that the United States does. He also predicted that the United States will soon recognize the Palestine Liberation Organization.
And after the Rabat conference, it is a fact now that the Palestinians are an integral part of the whole question. For that, I have prophesied that the time will not be so long before America will recognize the Palestinians.
President Sadat came to Paris to demonstrate his independence from Moscow and Washington, but he ended up by showing that this independence is limited. The purchase of French Mirage jets will lessen Sadat's reliance on the Soviet Union militarily. But in his talks here at the Élysée Palace, Sadat emphasized that politically, he is still very dependent on the United States, or as he puts it, on my friend Henry, to arrange another Middle East peace agreement. Garrick Utley, NBC News, in Paris.
This week's issue of People magazine has a picture of Ron Ziegler playing the drum. It's an appropriate picture because Ziegler, the former Nixon press spokesman, plans to march to a different drummer, himself. He'll leave Mr. Nixon now for the lecture circuit. David Brinkley has some thoughts on Ziegler's new career and on some of his problems.
Some of the big names from the Watergate drama are turning their fame into fortune. Several have written books. We have not seen any of them yet on shaving cream commercials, but some are booked on the lecture circuit at fees of $2,000 and $3,000 and up. But there are certain problems. Ron Ziegler, Nixon's press secretary, was to speak at Boston University for $2,700, but it was canceled when the dean of communications said nobody should get rich out of Watergate, and Ziegler's $2,700 became, so to speak, inoperative. He's also booked at Michigan State University, where the student government was to pay half the fee, but now it is refused, giving the same reason. But the university will honor the contract, and Ziegler will talk, though the students call for a boycott and picketing. John Dean also is booked for campus lectures at higher fees, since he did spend a little time in jail, and he did, after all, sink the entire Nixon fleet. And so far as we know, he has not yet had the troubles with fees that Ziegler has. Since Ziegler can talk all he wants, the issue is not free speech. The issue is paid speech, and they are not the same. When he was in the White House, people more or less had to listen to him. Well, now they don't have to listen, and they certainly don't have to pay him.
It's one of those days. Low back pain. Feels like all your muscles are one big knot of pain. That's when you need Heat. Heat's exclusive formula brings fast relief for low back pain. Just brush on Heat. In seconds, you feel a surge of warmth, a flood of heat, relieving that knot of pain so muscles feel better fast. Your back moves more freely for hours. Liquid Heat or Heat Spray. Fast relief for low back pain. Heat.
I'd like you to take a close look at this bread. The color is light brown, and the texture, a unique blend of whole grain wheat and whole grain rye. There's bran, defatted flax seed, and other nutritious ingredients, including pure golden honey. This isn't ordinary bread. It's Roman meal, the good-tasting light brown bread. Roman meal, natural whole grain goodness. The Roman Meal Company thought you'd like to know.
Finally this evening, truth may be stranger than fiction, and it is often more interesting. The lady on the left in this picture is a former Russian movie star who met a dashing American Navy captain in Moscow during the war. The lady on the right is the product of that relationship and is a star today in Russian movies. She wants to see her father, who lives in Florida, but there are complications. Don Dunkel has the story.
In 1944, Jackson Tate, then a captain, was in Moscow on assignment for the Navy. Aside from what he accomplished in Soviet-American war efforts, Tate met, he wooed, and he made love to Russia's premier movie actress, Zoya Fyodorova. The romance was frowned on by Joseph Stalin. Tate was asked to leave the country, and his lover was sent to 8 years in a Siberian labor camp. In 1963, Admiral Tate was contacted by a Russian-speaking American who'd learned that the wartime union had resulted in a daughter, Victoria. It came as news to Tate, but when his daughter, herself now a famous Soviet movie actress, wrote and asked his help to visit the United States, he agreed to do what he could.
It's all a bit unexpected to me. I will back her up 100%. And I would not take a chance. Matter of fact, I think it's a great compliment to the beautiful woman. That young will take a chance on her career, not only her career, but her life. I said, the Russians play for keeps, and she could be right back digging salt in Siberia, and she knows it.
Isn't that what happened to her mother?
Because that's what happened to her mother, and I don't know. The Russians are difficult people.
Mrs. Tate is a willing partner in the effort to get Victoria Fyodorova out of Russia.
I think any illegitimate daughter would like to see her father, that a man that's always claimed her and that's always loved her, and with their gifts and their telephone calls. I think it's beautiful.
There are others willing to help as well, and Tate has been deluged by mail, phone calls, and offers of movie and book contracts.
Write it to Mr. Brezhnev.
Admiral Tate says he'll take all the help he can get, and he will keep up as much public opinion pressure against the Russians as possible until his daughter and he can be together. Don Dunkel, NBC News, Orange Park, Florida.
That's it for this evening. Good night for NBC News.